Hi everyone, welcome to the Drawing Center. I'm Kagan Sparks. I'm our Special Events and Programs Associate. And this is our lab space, which is a part of the big renovation that we recently did on this building. This was prior to the renovation, this was not a public space, and we didn't have a space that was dedicated to public programs. So we're really excited to be able to host events like these. Tonight, we're pleased to welcome Jess Rolofson to the Drawing Center. Jess Rolofson is a Brooklyn-based comics journalist currently working on her first graphic novel. Tonight, Jess will discuss her work with the Joe Bonham Project, for which she and several artists visited wounded veterans at Walter Reed Military Medical Center, drawing and documenting their stories to cultivate a better understanding of the impact of war on this generation. So I'll welcome Jess up, and she'll show you some images.
Hello. Thanks, you guys, for coming. I know it's a weeknight, and there's lots of other stuff you could be doing. I'm going to take a picture for my blog, because I don't blog enough. So
everybody say
cheese. Yeah, everyone looks good. Oh, that's really good. Who's waving? Who is that? Oh, James. You're such a ham.
Okay, awesome. Okay, that's out of the way. So I was given 45 minutes to speak, and I think, oh, I can do this in like 15 minutes, but that's probably not going to happen. So I'm going to try to keep it around 30 and then open it up to questions at the end. So think of something good to say. So the Joe Bonham Project was started in 2010, I think, by Michael Fay, who is a veteran. He's a former Marine. I guess it's based on, I'm not entirely sure exactly what got Mike to think of the idea, but the character Joe Bonham is based on a book by, somebody help me out, you guys know this. You know this, literary people. You don't know this? Dalton Trumbo wrote about this guy who's a veteran, and he was wounded, and he loses all of his limbs, and he can't see. I think that he can hear, maybe, but he basically loses all of, you guys are like, oh. Yes, thank you. I remembered the author, but, so this guy, Joe Bonham, loses basically everything except for his presence of being, and the doctor's studying him, and he wants to get put in this glass case and taken around to be kind of like an example of what war can do to people. And I guess in the book, I haven't read it, he doesn't get his wish, and they forget all about him. So that's why Mike, sad, right? So that's why Mike called the project the Joe Bonham Project. He has a flair for the dramatic, but also it's true, it's just increasing visibility for wounded war veterans. And I came into, let's see if I can do this, yay! So this is a picture of Victor Juhas, who's, I guess, at the very top, and myself, and then Fred Harper, who's over there, a guest tonight. So anyway, so this is a picture from the first visit I went on with Victor Juhas, Fred Harper, I think Mike Fay was also there, and perhaps one other artist, or maybe five of us? Jeff Fisher was there. I know you guys don't really need to know this, I'm just jogging my memory. There's about five of us. That went on the first trip last year, which was February. We went in February, April, and August. Those are the trips that I went on. But they basically go every other month to Walter Reed Military Medical Center, which is in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of D.C. Walter Reed used to be in D.C., but was moved to the Naval Medical Hospital. So this guy on the left, Derek, was hit by an IED a few years ago and had been having extensive surgeries. So he was a rare case. A lot of people that come through to Walter Reed have been just injured like weeks prior to us meeting them. And are we working out the lights?
Yes.
Okay, it's okay, thanks.
Thank you.
So this is us in action, and I just, let me see if I can get my notes so I don't ramble quite so much. What was interesting, well, let me tell you how I met these guys. So if you guys can see the guy in the second row with the black shirt and the gray jacket who's smiling broadly, that's Mike Fay. Fred's not in this picture because he couldn't make it, I don't think. This is a show we had in D.C. of all the drawings that we had done, and there are also several artists who were doing combat art. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Nova. Oh, thank you. So this was a show we had this past November of all the drawings that we had done, or all the really good drawings that we had done in the hospital, but there are also illustrators that are working to raise awareness by going out into the field and embedding with dust-off units, like medical teams and different people that are going into combat and documenting what that might look like. So instead of having a camera, they're sort of chasing them around with a sketchbook and a pencil, which is just totally incredible. So it's really exciting to be a part of all this. And how did I meet these guys? I would like to tell you. So I read a lot of short stories because I can't commit to long fiction. I don't know if anyone else has the same problem. So I noticed that I wasn't really getting any smarter because I was reading short stories. No offense to short stories. So I was like, let me read some nonfiction. And on the Times, best nonfiction of the year was this book called War. And I knew that I was completely unaware of what was going on in Afghanistan or Iraq. And I was like, well, let me pick this up. This is probably decent, and I'll at least learn something. So I was really blown away by the way that it was written. Sebastian Younger is a war journalist, and he had teamed up with Tim Hetherington, who's, a war photographer. And they made this documentary called Restrepo, which is really incredible. So they made both of these pieces at the same time. And I was trying to figure out how I could put this type of stuff in my work. I didn't want to go to Afghanistan. This is a photograph that Tim Hetherington took. He did a series of photographs called Sleeping Soldiers. So all these guys would be coming back from whatever they were getting back from at their outposts. And there's no sheets on the beds, and they have their boots at the ready, and they're just like in these really beautiful poses. So I saw Tim Hetherington's work, and I was really excited by it. And then a few months after I was introduced to his work, he was killed in Libya, documenting the uprising there, and it made me really sad, and I was like, what am I doing with my life? So I knew that I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what to do or how to do it or anything like that. But they both inspired me. Those pieces inspired me to try to write about these guys. And I've always wanted to make comics. I went to school for illustration and cartooning and took a few cartooning classes, but was never convinced of my voice as a writer. And a lot of comics, or the good comics that I enjoy, have a really great basis in literature and writing. So I had the idea to interview veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, not necessarily wounded veterans, but the first guy I met was Clifton Hicks, who went to Iraq at the start of the occupation. And he's just a natural storyteller, really interesting guy. I heard about him. I was taking banjo lessons. Let me see if I can get the next slide. So this is me kind of going to banjo class and then introducing some people that frequented this place that I took banjo lessons at. And my teacher, Eli, taught me banjo. He has this podcast called Down Home Radio Show. And in the podcast he did, a year and a half prior to me stumbling across it, it was an interview with Clifton, and he's a accomplished old-time banjo player. And as soon as he started talking, I knew I wanted to talk to him, and then it was revealed that he was a veteran. And so I actually got the opportunity to meet him. A lot of the material in this comic, this is just an 8-page comic, a lot of the material in this comic was from the podcast, and also there were videos of him on YouTube. He was one of the soldiers who spoke at the Winter Soldier hearings and testified against the war crimes that he witnessed at during his tenure as a soldier. What was interesting, another amazing and interesting thing to me about Clifton, is that he's a conscientious objector of the war and got out of the army really quickly. As soon as his, as soon as his tour was up, he was one of the first units to be stop-loss. So he's got this he was at the very beginning of the Iraq War, so he's got all this stuff, these really interesting things happening. But he's also a Civil War reenactor, which I thought was really, like, fascinating. You know, like, well, I thought you were against the war. He's an archaeology major and a huge history nerd and really into archaic banjo and just a really interesting guy. What I liked about talking with veterans and what I started to notice as soon as I met Clifton is that I had this notion of veterans being very one-dimensional, like, oh, they just like to shoot guns and smash beer cans on their foreheads. And my friend Nathan, who's a Marine, said, well, we do like to do that, but we also do other things. Nathan's a firefighter in the Northwest. He fights forest fires half of the year. So all these guys that I'm starting to get to know have all these really good stories, and I didn't feel like I had a lot of authority in trying to describe an actual war experience, because I've never been to war, but I had a real heart for the stories that they had and just what they were interested in. So I think when I first meet veterans, they're like, well, what do you want to talk about? Or like, are we going to talk about WAR? Like, it's kind of this thing they're happy to speak about. Most of them are just really vocal about their experiences and they want to share that stuff. But what I'm interested in is like, what's interesting to you? What are you getting into now that you're back from the war? Like, what makes you tick, basically? So after I cut my teeth with that, I submitted it to the Society of Illustrators, which is this great organization in New York that honors people that know how to draw really well and gets their work published in magazines and advertising and things like this. So on the very far right, the really handsome guy with the long hair, that's Fred. He's actually here tonight if you want his autograph. He's super talented. From left to right is Ray Alma, who does sort of like Mad Magazine cartooning. Victor Juhas is an amazing illustrator and political cartoonist. He's done stuff for the Rolling Stone and a bunch of other guys. And Fred Harper, he's just amazing. I just don't know what to say. And Jeff is crazy, as you can obviously tell. So these are all people who have, and I'm in the middle. I really like this photo because it kind of illustrates where I was at. All these guys, I met them. I got my comic that you guys just saw into the sequential show at the Society of Illustrators, which is a huge deal for me and a big honor. And then I talked to Victor, who was coordinating the visits to Walter Reed, and I didn't really know who he was, and then I looked him up. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is really talented, and he's been doing art forever, and I don't know how to, I can't believe that they're inviting me to go with them to Walter Reed, but they did. So I was more nervous about kind of hanging with these guys that were super, just really inspiring to be around. I wasn't really nervous about meeting new people or talking to veterans necessarily. I was a little nervous, but it was funny that I was more intimidated by the people I was with. But once we started palling around, I quickly changed my tune. So this is an image that was taken during the first visit. This guy had, I can't remember, I think he had maybe like an RPG or something land near him, and he had been injured a few years prior to us meeting him and had just come back for some type of reconstructive surgery in his wrist to get the dorsiflexion back. And they made us suit up because he had just come out of surgery. The fourth floor that we were able to visit, it has to be really sterilized, and not all of them are like this, but this is a special case, so we had to wear this gown and these rubber gloves, and it's extremely difficult to draw wearing rubber gloves when you're sweating and nervous, and it was really funny. He was great because he was unconscious for most of it. He was a really great model. He would wake up and he'd be totally lucid and answer a bunch of questions and then just close his eyes again. So every room is different and interesting, and it was really great in his room because it's like an empty, almost like a hotel room. A lot of other rooms had personal effects, but this guy had just been bussed in from the ER. Yeah, sure, Dean. Yeah, go ahead.
Do they know, do they just wake up and you're drawing them? They knew you were going to draw them before.
Well, so we are allowed through the PR department, because it's on a military base, we have to get permission. And then they give us permission, and we go on a specific day. We usually can only draw for 4 hours. There's about like 4 to 5 artists Or 2 hours. I think we only draw for like 2 hours.
But the patient.
But the patient. So we have a guy from the PR department that will go in, knock on the door, excuse me. They're used to getting people from all, you know,
like
John Mayer and Kevin Bacon and Ozzy Osbourne and the President of the United States will just be like, hey, are you decent? I want to hang out.
Wow.
So they're kind of used to a bunch of weirdos showing up at all hours. So if they're not at PT or if they're not doing anything, they're, you know, they're kind of like, come on in. It's like their living room. So this guy, he was just, we got his permission when he was awake, but and when we were there, he knew we were there, but that's about as far as it goes. I sent him an email afterward with all the pictures, like, hey, I drew your picture, thanks so much. And didn't say anything back, so I'm not sure if he knew, but I'm gonna hope for the best. But so yeah, they have really good drugs at the military hospital. Which they should. So that's where your tax dollars are going. Don't worry about it. So this is a drawing I did of Zach. I really like this Swiss cheese thing he had. This is when he was awake and talking for a brief moment. He was easy to please. You didn't have to worry about getting his likeness because he went right back to sleep. This is the guy, Derek, that you guys saw in the previous photograph. He was super cool. So he was sort of the opposite. He was super talkative and he took his shirt off and wanted to show us his scars and tattoos and talk a lot more. He had been there for about a year and a half, I think, and had a bunch of surgeries. And he was doing really, really great. So it was cool to meet him. Then we went on so that was the first trip. I think Zach and Derek, the past two slides, the two guys that you guys just saw, I encountered them on my first visit. This was from my visit in April with Michael Rhodes, who I made a comic about after I met him. Let me see. These are some other drawings from a trip I made in August. This is Josh and this is Nathan. So this is the comic I made. So when I was going, you kind of have a lot to do as an artist. You get about 20 minutes to go in there and get their trust and tell them I'm not a weirdo, I just want to hang out. And try to get their likeness and show it to them and kind of befriend them and see if they want to talk. And if they don't, it's fine. So I was going in just getting whatever I could, but not necessarily with an agenda. Like, oh, I've got my reporter's notebook and I'm going to ask you these questions. It was more about, let's see what happens. Let's watch it unfold. And what was cool about Michael, we just drew him for about 15 minutes, but I was able to get an audio recording of him describing how he was injured. So you guys see on the second page, I drew the picture that you guys saw of all of us in front of Walter Reed. And then at the bottom, I'm giving some history about the Joe Bonham Project. That's Mike Fay. So this is what Walter Reed looks like right now, because it's at the Naval Medical Center, and we were on the fourth floor. Let's see. Michael's story is really interesting. As soon as we met him, he was really different from everyone else, because the first thing was that he had all of his limbs, and he looked like nothing had happened to him, and we're like, whoa, what's this guy's deal? And he was very soft-spoken, and just a very sweet guy, and his father and his mother were both in the room, and myself and Ray Alma got to chat with him. So the dialogue that's in this comic is based on audio recording that I took. So I say, First Lieutenant Michael Rhodes is a Marine who hails from Portland, Oregon. His mother and father were visiting when we arrived. You guys came all the way from Portland? I'm not sure why. Not what I was planning to do this week. At 25 years old, this was Rhodes' first deployment. Rhodes has been in the Marine Corps for 3 years and attended the Naval Academy. We asked Michael questions as we drew his portrait. He spoke softly and kept his hands still as he talked. So what happened? Unlike some other veterans I had met before at the hospital, Michael had all of his limbs and appeared uninjured. He was a long, slender odalisque. I knew right away that something had happened. I kind of looked down, tried to move my hands. Nothing was quite responding the way it normally does. Some blood started dripping down. I tried saying something, but no words were coming out. Finally, I was able to croak something out. By that time, I realized I was hit. Rhodes was hit by a bullet while lying prone during a patrol in North Helmand Province, Afghanistan. The guys on the ground took really good care of me. I was pretty lucky. So they were right there? Yeah, they were Johnny on the spot, which was awesome. When did this happen? April 15th? Wait, this month? Tax day? I'm doing pretty well, all considering. I had at one point 3 chest tubes, but the last one was removed a few days ago. But like 10 days ago, you were in Afghanistan, and now you're sitting here in D.C. I know, it's pretty surreal. All your buddies are back there, right? Can you be in touch with them? Yeah, I have been. They actually gave me a call when they got back from the operation. I was still in Germany, and they were able to get a hold of me, which was great. Now, on first listen, when this conversation was happening, when he said operation, I thought he meant his personal operation to save his life. I was like, oh, cool, they called you to make sure you're okay. And what it was is he was calling his guys to make sure that they were okay. And that really, really blew me away. I thought that was so cool. So after listening to it again, I was like, that's what I want to draw. They say my lung capacity should return to normal. Sometimes I feel like a little kid trying to tell a story. Every couple of words, I have to take a breath. They got stuff for me to work on it with. It makes this like woo sound and also like a clicking sound. Like I can't do them both at the same time. If I had a backup singer, I would do it. I'm hoping if I can recover quickly enough, I can make it back over there before their deployment ends. I'm not sure if that's realistic or not. I don't know how long the recovery is going to be. So this was a really quick, just a short comic. It was like 15 minutes of tape, and a lot of it was like, well, what do you want to do with your life? You know, that was my tack. Like, well, what are you interested in? What are you excited about? And he was like, I have no idea. Like every other 25-year-old I know. You know, I was like, I don't know. I'm in the hospital. I'm going to get better, and I'll talk to you later. And he was kind of like a reserved, quiet guy. But what was interesting to me was how soon we visited the hospital on April 27th. So we're like, oh, when did this happen? When did you get shot? And he was like, oh, within like the 15th. You know, so offhand. And then, me and Ray are drawing, and we're like, it takes us a minute because we're artists and we're not great at math to begin with, to be stereotypical. But also, we weren't expecting him to say that. It was really, really interesting. And it seemed to me that a lot of the guys that we met were happy to go back as soon as they could. They were like, or they wanted to try to get, you know, they weren't, just because they were taken out by an injury, they're actually still active duty. They had the option to go back in whatever capacity that they could or were able or wanted to, which I didn't know about until I went to the hospital. So this is an example of a different comic with a veteran that I'm friends with that I went to high school with. His name is Nathan. He's a Marine reservist. He's no longer serving, and he's a firefighter. I'm not going to read this one, but I'm going to paraphrase really quickly and then open up to questions. Nathan came back from his first deployment on leave a few months after Hurricane Katrina hit. So he was kind of expecting to get downtime and unwind, and then he comes back home. They actually had to be bussed in from Atlanta or someplace really far away, which is about 12 hours on a bus. So they flew to like North Carolina and then flew to Atlanta, I'm pretty sure, and then they took a bus, and they had to be kind of manipulated on these roads that were all closed and full of debris. So picture like Hurricane Sandy, but slightly more exponential, and then throw some people who are like coming back from Iraq into it, and they're like, oh, what's this? So he's talking about kind of coming back and having a hard time relating to people and not being able to even talk to the guys that were in his unit that were coming back about, you know, like, this is kind of weird. And this piece appeared in the Oxford American, which is why it's in color, but it's also available for purchase in black and white that I made on the Xerox machine. So it's a little less fancy, but it's the same story. And then he also talked about coming back and kind of reacclimating to people, finally finding his people. and what he was interested in. And it kind of doesn't really have an ending yet because I'm still working on it. So I think this concludes the visual part of my presentation. If you guys wanted to chat or ask questions. No pressure for you. Yes?
I was really struck by in the Lieutenant Rhodes piece, when you're representing the injury, you did it in a very abstract way, which I actually found really powerful. I was wondering, you're talking to the guy and you're not there able to see it. How you made those decisions as to how to represent it and what you were thinking in putting the piece together that way.
Cool. I'm really glad you asked that question because I'm really proud of that solution. I felt really smart when I figured it out. So I don't know. I guess when people tell me these stories, it's like if someone were telling you a story like I was driving down the road, I can relate to that. I've been in a car and I know what a road looks like. But if someone's like, I got shot and I was on patrol, and I'm like, what is that like? Or what does that country look like? Or what does that smell like? Or what were you doing? So I was trying to figure out, I had the audio recording, I turned it into a transcript, and I'm trying to figure out, I've underlined this, I want to draw it, but I don't know how to draw it. And I noticed, I think I had kind of picked something up and put it in my brain. I read this really great comic called City of Glass that David Mazzucchelli did, and the whole thing is sort of like a hard-boiled detective thing, and it's he just all these like abstract weird drawings that I would have you almost get lost because it's so weird. But I was like, I didn't know you could do that. And so I got permission from David Mazzucchelli, even though I've never met him, to do that, to be like kind of less literal. And I just had this idea when he said nothing's really working. I was like, I just pictured a light switch that was off in this dark room where it's like, that's it. And then I was trying to figure out, how do I draw someone who's like potentially like bleeding out, or I don't know what his injury was exactly. I knew that he told me exactly what happened, but I didn't want to literally draw that. So I don't know where it came from. Some magical angel like landed upon me and I was inspired, but I basically, it was an avoidance of trying to draw the literal because I didn't feel like I had authority to do so because I didn't know what it looked like, and I wanted to honor his story. And so I was just trying to think, when I get hurt, I go into panic and kind of go inside of myself when I get physically hurt, and like what that feels like. And I was like, well, it'd probably be really graphic and just this thing and, something kind of growing and, kind of freaking you out a bit. So that's how I figured that out. does anyone else have any questions or comments? Yes?
Since you're the one who talked to these people, do you have personal ideals for what you hope people take away from reading it?
Like my audience?
Yeah.
You guys? Well, I hope you like it. So I guess my ideal audience is someone like me who's curious and wants to know, what are these people interested in? Or they might be me 2 or 3 years ago, who was like, people in the military are very one-dimensional and I just don't, associate with them. I don't really get why anyone would want to fight in a war. It's just more about, I guess, people that like hearing stories, that want to know. Not necessarily, the stuff that's reported in the news, like, oh, this guy got this big medal, it was a big deal, or this person got... a lot of the veterans I've talked to that have sustained extreme traumatic physical injuries are like, oh, nothing really happened. And I'm like, you don't have any legs. And they're like, it wasn't really a big deal. I don't have PTSD. It's fine, I'm serious. And then the guys that have PTSD are like, well, I'm not a good example of a veteran. I don't really have external injuries, so I can't really raise awareness. Like, I literally have read that stuff, and I'm like, what are you talking about? But I think a lot of guys and women that go are just like, I signed up for this, so they think that their experience is sort of middle of the road, but I think that all of them are really interesting. And even someone who doesn't really talk a lot, like Michael Rhodes, he just talked to me for like 10 minutes. I never talked to him after that. And I've sent him emails and we'll write back and forth, but it's like, hi, how are you? Goodbye. I don't really know a lot about this guy, but you can tell a lot about somebody just by, like, this little story that you get. So I hope that there's something about that that's fascinating to me, and I just hope that there are enough people that exist in the world where someone else is picking up on that and wants to hear about it. Yes?
This is great. I mean, these really interesting guys you're talking to people. And I'm wondering, you talk about following up with them, emails, right? Is there anybody that you're like tracking after, like Walter Reed, and like through those? You know,
yeah, I'm going to pull up a Mark Rubio and get my water really fast. Okay, so I think initially when they said, come to Walter Reed and draw, I was like, oh, this will be great, I'll like get to see them get well, and that'll be a really inspiring, super cool story. And most of these guys are so incredibly busy, they've got a huge schedule full of physical therapy and lots of other therapies and families and meeting the president and all the military brass and all that weird stuff. So one of the guys I was really interested, Nathan, a different Nathan, there's lots of Nathans, he was injured. He lost both of his legs. I met him in August, like 2 weeks after his injury, and drew him in the context of his hospital room. And then the following month, there was a comic book festival literally like a quarter of a mile down the road from Walter Reed. And I was like, well, obviously, are you free? I want to come see you. And he had been moved from the fourth floor, kind of somewhere in between like ICU and regular hospitals, like they're doing okay, but they need to get bandages changed and stuff like that. He got moved from that location to this place called Building 62, which is an apartment building, like a dorm, where there's room for him and his family members to stay there. So I visited him, and he was like, this is 30 days, something like that. He was gigantic. Like, he lost a lot of weight. When you get injured, you lose a lot of weight. And he had put a lot of it on, and when I first met him, I mean, he was still really cognitive and animated when I first met him, and it was funny because he looked better physically, but he was much more, in the beginning, kind of withdrawn. So I think when he was in the hospital room, he was kind of on display and like really hamming it up. And now when I was coming into his private living space, there was this totally different dynamic, which is really interesting. Him and his mom were there, and they're both extremely gracious, super kind-hearted people. So me and my friend, who's also named Nathan, who's not a veteran, he's an artist, we went from the comic book festival and saw him there. And he's in a wheelchair at this point, which was really different. You're like, oh, this guy doesn't... When he's laying in the bed and he's got his sheets and stuff like that, you're like, oh, okay. But so it was kind of the first time I noticed he doesn't have half of his legs. And then we were sitting and chit-chatting, and then he was like, do you want to see my legs? Like, he was like, you know, do you want to see him? I was like, yeah, that'd be great. So he and his mom go into the other room, and so he gets, you know, he's getting off his wheelchair, and we can't see this, so this is like some type of comedy or something. He's like, I can do it myself, mom. Like, he's like kind of getting onto her, like classic dude move, I think. And then he comes out, I think before the injury, he was around like 5'11", and because he lost both of his legs, he was able to get an upgrade. So now he's 6'2". And he is... So as soon as I saw him, I mean, it's really hard for me, I have to be honest, because all of these guys are totally gorgeous, like absolutely beautiful. They're too young for me. Just, you know, I'm just being real with you. And, you know, they're like required by their job to be physically fit. So they're like the best shape they've ever been in. So it's kind of a good time to lose your legs in a weird way, because they're starting at the best possible place. They're not like overweight. They don't have diabetes, you know, like they're ready to go in a way. So he comes out, and I was like, wow, like, I just was like, can I give you a hug? I was so excited. I just wanted to, like, touch him. Like, but also, like, wow, you're really handsome. I mean, so, and another funny thing between the August and the September visit. So in August, I was like, what do you want to do when you get out? And he's like, well, I'm single. I'm a lieutenant. I'm in D.C. You know, he's kind of like, I got to check out what my options are. And then, yeah, and I saw him in September, and he's, like, showing me pictures of his girlfriend, who is so beautiful. And I was like, really? Like, he already had a girlfriend. She's beautiful. So it was really funny. Sorry, guys. It was really funny to see the difference in 30 days. Like, you know, so he's quieter in a way, and he put on more weight or whatever, but then all this stuff was already happening. He's so, like, such a funny guy. So ideally, I would like to continue relationships with these guys, but it just depends on how it goes. It's been easier to continue relationships with people outside of the Joe Bonham Project, like veterans I went to high school with. But they've also had more time in between their injury and me chatting with them about it. So their perspective is really different. It's almost like they had a lot of time to kind of think about it. So these guys are like, I just got hurt, with anywhere between like a year and a half to 10 days, like, you know. And so it would be really great to meet them like as they first come in. I know, Victor, you also met someone, I think the year prior to us visiting. I can't remember his name's Jason. And he had lost a lot of his, like, everything below his hips, I think, except for the good stuff, I think. Yeah. I'm not sure. And we got to meet him, like, a year and a half later, and he was gigantic. Like, he was, it's amazing, like, they really physically change. They get, like, really muscular, and they do all this physical therapy. Yeah, but, I mean, it's almost like what they lose, they kind of, they get almost, like, they get close back to, like, regular body weight because they're doing so much more with the rest of their body. So, I don't know. Does anyone else have questions? Yes?
So, war is just such a controversial and political topic these days, and I feel like a lot of people will be looking at your work looking for some type of angle, like, are you anti-war? Are you pro-war? Mm-hmm. Are you, like, what are you getting at here? So, are you hoping to just sort of avoid that whole thing by just focusing on stories alone without touching on the, you know, pro-anti-war thing? Or how do you see yourself approaching that argument?
That's a really good question. I've definitely asked myself that. I'm like, what am I going to do? Because it is very political. I guess I kind of stay out of it by just allowing the service members to tell their story. But a lot of the service members do have a political slant, and if they express it in a way where I feel like there's something that I could draw that would benefit that and edify that, then I will do it. But most of the time it's just in passing, like, oh, this is what I think about this. The same way you would talk to anybody. It's not really where the story's at. So I haven't really made it political. The first guy I interviewed, Clifton Hicks, he's a conscientious objector, was really, really vocal when he first came back from the war. And I mentioned that, but I'm not, like, getting on any kind of soapbox. And that's what I really took away from reading War by Sebastian Younger, is because they were just like, this is what it's like. We're at this outpost. We're getting shot at. This is what this guy is into. It was just really the facts. So, you know, politics are facts, but they're also opinions, you know? So it's more about, like, being journalistic and objective, but still honoring sort of the really specific narrative that they have. Good question. Does anyone else have a good question or a bad question or a silly question? Yeah?
So you mentioned PTSD.
Yes.
Have you done anything with those guys?
Yeah, so my friend Nathan Galster, who I did the color copy comic, Haditha Katrina, he has PTSD. There's also another guy. I mean, I think a lot of them do have PTSD, but it just depends on whether or not that's their story, if they want to talk about it. I did work on a piece, a 16-page comic piece at this residency that was really great that I went to with Dean Haspiel, who's sitting over there. You should totally nerd out with him about comics. And that piece was about this guy, Paul Mansfield, who was in the army in Iraq with one of his good friends. And he talks about being diagnosed with PTSD and traumatic brain injury, like, several years after he's gotten back from war and also gotten out of the service. And the way that he found out about it, he was laying tile and like looked up at the clock, and it was around 11:30, and he was like, oh, I think I want to get some lunch soon. And then he looked back at the clock, and it was 4 p.m., and he lost this huge block of time, and he got really freaked out. And he drove 30 minutes, because he said, he's in Virginia, he said, I drove from Norfolk to Suffolk, and I immediately went on Google Maps to see what this 30 minutes, he doesn't remember. Even after that, he's just driving, and a police officer found him and got him to the VA, and the VA got him some good doctors, and now he knows where he's at, and he's able to work with that. But there's a real problem with, like, diagnosing that stuff, because it's not like, okay, you very clearly are injured, and we need to do something with that physical injury. So, yeah, like, if they want to talk about it, and it's something that they've sort of got a perspective on, then I'm like, let's do it. So that's my next story, I think, would be dealing more with that for sure. And a lot of my stories aren't necessarily injuries. Like, war is really, really hardcore and sad, and you do come back changed in a different person, but I'm also, it can be more lighthearted and funny and more organic than just like, let me just beat you over the head. Like, everyone knows war is sad and terrible, but what else can we say about it that might be interesting? Like, that's what I'm interested in talking about. Was that it? That's cool. It's cool with me. That's cool with you. Okay, so I just want to thank each person who came out. I really appreciate you coming. I was afraid no one would come because a lot of my friends were like, I can't make it. And I'm like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But when it was like 6:20, I'm like, I wonder if I'm going to be the only person. So it's really great to talk about this stuff because it kind of gets my head to think about what I want to do next. And I'm really excited that there's people who want to know about this stuff. I have comics up here. I also have free business cards if you want to follow my work on the internet. And I think that's all I've got, but it was a real pleasure. Thank you very much.